Hi, Michaela Lafrac here. The podcast you are about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Last July, more than 9 inches of rain fell in 48 hours on communities across Vermont. Homes and businesses were destroyed. Vermonters were heartened to see that right after the rain stopped, FEMA moved in. The Federal Emergency Management Agency helps people in federally declared disaster zones apply for aid. The hope that many felt when they first started working with FEMA faded quickly. A new investigation published today by Vermont Public reveals a pattern of administrative bloat. FEMA has spent more money on its own administrative costs than it has given to flood victims. And survivors of last summer's flooding say the agency often seemed less interested in providing assistance than it did in finding ways to deny aid. Reporter Peter Hirschfeld has spent months reporting this story. He joins us now from Montpelier. Pete, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Michaela.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you with us. Pete, in the immediate aftermath of last summer's flooding, what was FEMA's initial response like?
It was massive. FEMA deployed hundreds of employees to the state in the days following the flood. They came from places as far away as Los Angeles. And that presence was very visible. You could see it in the streets. There were FEMA employees on the ground in places, you know, you'd expect, like downtown Barrie and Montpelier that just got hammered. But I can recall driving to places like Glover and seeing FEMA employees walking down roads and knocking on doors. The head FEMA administrator, Deanne Criswell, she flew into the state and had a press conference with Phil Scott right after the flood. She pledged the agency's full support. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg toured flood-hit areas. And there was this sense that I was picking up on of people being like, wow, FEMA is on this, right? They're not just here. They're here in force. And I think that sense of hope that you referenced earlier was palpable. It brought a lot of optimism to folks who I think really needed it in that moment.
Right. Hope that the federal government was going to be there with a helping hand during this extremely difficult time. But soon after, you started to hear this different narrative emerge, including in an email that you got in August from a FEMA employee. What did it say?
So this person said to me, you know, it would be interesting if you looked into how much FEMA is spending on itself to distribute money to flood victims in Vermont. And I began a correspondence with this individual in which they confirmed to me they are indeed a current FEMA employee with knowledge of the recovery mission in Vermont. And they offered me this view from inside the agency that was not very flattering. They said they were extremely concerned about administrative bloat at FEMA. They said it's pervasive. They said they and a lot of other staffers there are quote, aghast at the waste that they see. And their view is the agency is spending enormous amounts of money on positions that don't deliver any concrete benefits to flood survivors. I developed some contacts with other current and former FEMA employees as well who had really the exact same concerns. And they said this extraordinary level of human and financial resources that FEMA is investing in its recovery mission are not always leveraged for the benefit of the people who actually suffered property damage as a result of the flood. And what was striking was just the consistency of that narrative, how common it was in the people that I talked to. Mm-hmm.
And those messages were echoed not just by FEMA employees that you spoke to, but folks who went to FEMA to apply for aid. What kinds of stories did you start to hear from Vermonters?
Oh, you know, it's just there's so many sad stories out there and so many people left that experience feeling frustrated and confused and rejected and in some cases really traumatized. What I heard from people is at the outset, it was difficult for them to figure out how to apply for aid. When they finally submitted those applications, they would receive correspondences back from FEMA that were difficult to understand, didn't really seem to provide clarity on how to proceed. People would invest a ton of time and energy into getting answers from a FEMA representative, think they had, you know, reached the mountaintop, and then they would hear from another FEMA employee on a different day that the previous information they had received was, in fact, not correct, and that they need to overhaul their application in ways that basically felt like starting from scratch for a lot of people. Melanie Carpenter is somebody I talked to for this story. She's a long-term recovery volunteer in Lamoille County who spent a lot of time working with flood survivors. And I have a clip here of how she summarized what she saw from FEMA last summer and fall.
I just think that that's a horribly unfair process for people. I think that the federal government could do so much better to be like, let's front load this. Let's have universal design. Let's figure out how to make this easier for people so that they could get the support that they needed. And I just feel like for the money that the government spends to prop up these systems, that this is their response, that it could be much more effective because it certainly didn't help so many people in our town.
Pete, one of the things that just really struck me reading your story were some of the descriptions of what people would see when they would go to one of these federal disaster relief centers and talk to employees. They would see, you know, dozens of employees there often, many more than the number of Vermonters that were going to request aid. Can you kind of paint us a visual description of some of these centers?
Well, I mean, I was just talking the other day with somebody who I didn't interview for this story, but was just chatting with them, and they were involved in the flood response at the state level, and they were talking about going to a disaster recovery center in Washington County, and they went to the spot, and there were about a dozen FEMA staffers there, but nobody actually there to ask questions. And they said it was this fascinating dynamic when once every couple of hours when somebody would walk in, it was like this rush of all the FEMA people that were there to kind of come up and try to help them. You know, I heard other stories, though, that were not related to disaster recovery centers where FEMA hires were just confused at what they were doing with their days. They would be a part of an 8-person crew that was, you know, measuring basement walls in a state building in Montpelier with, as they described it to me, one person measuring the dimension on a wall, another person recording that, and then all the other people just sort of watching and following. They just didn't know what to make of it. And you know, I talked to a lot of folks who said, look, we want FEMA to overdo it on resources, right? If you're a state like Vermont, you want more than you need here than not enough. But the administrative costs that have been incurred on this mission to a lot of people that I've talked to seem sort of disproportionate to the amount of aid and help that FEMA has provided here. And the other concern is that they feel like those resources could be used in different ways that do generate better outcomes for flood survivors.
Mm. Pete, what are some of the costs associated with keeping out-of-state FEMA workers here in Vermont? A lot of these folks come from all over the country, as you mentioned.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, if you're coming here from out of state, you need a roof over your head, right? So that means paying for hotels. In some cases, FEMA employees actually lease apartment units. If you're in Vermont, you need a car to get around, especially if you're working on a flood recovery mission. So there were rental cars that FEMA had to pay for. FEMA reimburses employees that deploy to disaster zones for meals, so the agency is picking up those costs. You got to have a place to put 400-plus workers, so FEMA leased an outfitted office space for its employees to work out of. That costs money. There are line items in there even for things like laundry, Michaela. So, you know, pretty much anything a human being needs, not only to do their job but to live day to day, is reflected in the administrative costs that a federal agency like FEMA incurs when it does this kind of work.
Mm. We just received an email from a listener named Ethan in Barrie who says, I applied for aid from FEMA to help repair my basement. I went on FEMA's website shortly after the deadline to check on the status of my application, only to find that they had deleted not only my application, but my login credentials as well. They acted like it never happened. Now, Pete, the process of applying for aid, like Ethan experienced, it often wrongly leads disaster survivors to believe that their requests for aid have been denied. This is called reject an appeal. Can you describe it for us?
Yeah, it's a phenomenon that I began to counter early in the course of reporting, and it happens at the outset of the application process. When flood survivors file their initial request for aid, there are countless survivors in Vermont who filed what they thought would be very straightforward requests for financial help, but they received responses that didn't actually offer them any aid and also gave them no clarity on how or whether they should proceed. What they were getting was something that looked like a rejection, but in fact, often it wasn't. And that lack of clarity and confusion stems from that language that would lead a reasonable person to assume that this request has been turned down. Vermont's congressional delegation has a lot of concerns with FEMA's flood response, but this reject and appeal phenomenon is something that they're especially concerned about. Congresswoman Becca Ballin told me that it creates untenable barriers to assistance for a lot of flood survivors. And she said that's really problematic in a rural state like Vermont, where you have, you know, small municipal governments that don't have the resources to sort of hold people's hands as they walk through this process and make sure that they aren't, you know, subjected to the kind of bureaucratic barriers that a lot of Vermonters were.
Mm. And how did Vermont's local recovery officials respond to this process? So you talked to Doug Farnham, for one.
Yeah. So, you know, Douglas Farnham, Vermont's chief flood recovery officer, he told me he was impressed in a good way, in a lot of ways, by how robust FEMA's response was, just in terms of the sheer volume of employees they sent here. And he says he witnessed a lot of earnest people of goodwill who work for FEMA, who were doing everything in their power to improve the lives of flood survivors. He says he also thinks that FEMA's approach to the individual assistance process is not really well suited to the needs of people who are reeling from a disaster.
Yeah.
And he says there's no doubt that the way FEMA handled the assistance process resulted in Vermonters not getting as much aid as they should from the federal government.
Well, you reached out to FEMA for comment on all of these concerns that you reported on. How did they respond?
So they wouldn't give me an interview, which was frustrating for me, honestly, because I would have loved to have in-depth conversations with them about the things we're talking about right now. They did, though, respond to some written questions. They said that FEMA is committed to fulfilling its statutory mission, which is to stabilize communities after a disaster and to provide support for individuals and communities to build back and be more resilient. FEMA also told me that they're not supposed to be a panacea, right? That they don't exist to make people whole, and that FEMA is part of a disaster response apparatus that includes state and local governments, that includes volunteer organizations. I think people try to choose jobs in life, right, that are consistent with their values as a human. And my guess is that the vast majority of FEMA employees are mission-oriented individuals who've chosen this line of work because they think they can make a difference in the lives of vulnerable people. The issue, though, right now in Vermont is that a lot of people who know a lot about disaster recovery say the FEMA bureaucracy writ large, not the individuals in it, but the bureaucracy itself, is just not functioning in a way that we want it to or expect it to. And you know, my story is really just them sharing their stories in the hope that this could lead to some reforms.
And Pete, one thing I keep coming back to is the way that you were able to quantify that bureaucratic response. So you found that the agency had incurred more than $78 million in administrative costs compared to the $43 million in individual assistance to flood survivors that the federal government has handed out in Vermont following the summer's flooding. Those numbers are just striking.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some important context, right?
Yeah.
There's $78.3 million in administrative costs compared to about $43 million in individual assistance. Once this is all said and done, FEMA will be giving Vermont a lot more than that, or distributing a lot more than that. State and federal officials estimate that in total, Vermont will get about $600 million in public assistance. There is important context there. I will say I asked FEMA for a breakdown of how many FEMA employees were assigned to public assistance claims exclusively. And between the flood itself and early October, it was about 10% of FEMA employees on the ground that were devoted to public assistance.
Huh.
So the lion's share of the administrative costs do seem to relate to individual assistance. But that $43 million does not tell the whole story in terms of what FEMA is going to provide. So something to note.
Well, let's take a couple calls here. We have Alan in Ludlow on the line. Alan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My wife and I were survivors of the last July flood. FEMA's immediate assistance as far as rental assistance, the response was very good. They provided us 2 months rental assistance, and if we needed more, then we would have to jump through a number of hoops to get that, which is understandable. They didn't really ask for any receipts for that, so in theory you could spend that money on whatever immediate needs you had. They were reluctant to offer us assistance until we got our flood insurance claim, which I understand they don't want people double dipping. But I think they need to better coordinate the immediate assistance with the long-term flood hazard mitigation grants. We're applying for a grant to elevate our home, so we won't know specifically what other needs we might have until that is done, which could potentially be into next year. But our experience was the immediate assistance as far as, you know, immediate needs, emergent needs, was pretty good. The long-term red tape you have to go through is kind of a pain in the neck, and I wonder if they could better coordinate that. I think some people needed some mitigation funds right away who didn't have flood insurance, and FEMA is reluctant to dole out money toward that.
Thank you, Alan. So a call for better coordination, especially in the longer-term response from somebody who has been dealing with FEMA over the past year. We have Joe in Hardwick on the line as well. Joe, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I just I'm a little surprised by the story because up here we saw pretty immediate response. And if I hate to say this, but if you stayed on top of the paperwork, and, you know, some of it was confusing, but, you know, if you read it slowly and you followed the directions and there were lots of kind of community setups to help people, then the aid came. We didn't have massive damage, but we had significant things to pay for, and FEMA was pretty much on it. There was a screw-up in the beginning where the first rep that came out looked at the damage, and she didn't report it correctly, and then a second guy came out and said, oh, this is way more extensive than she's reported, so we're going to up the amount of aid. So, I mean, the overall experience was pretty good. We were impressed. I just wonder at times if, I don't know, Vermonters expect too much, and you got to do your legwork. I mean,
Joe, that's an interesting point, and I would love to, I apologize for cutting you off. We're just running out of time here, and I want to make sure Pete Hirschfeld, our reporter on the line, has a chance to respond to that last point you just made.
Yeah, certainly there are Vermonters that were able to navigate the process in ways that led to great results for them. And I think that's the expectation that people have, right? That's what FEMA is there to do. And so I'm glad to hear that Joe and other people in Hardwick felt like FEMA was there for them in a way that worked for them. it's clear that from the people that we talked to, that, you know, the dozens and dozens of people that we talked to, that that wasn't the experience that everybody had. And I think it's totally appropriate to celebrate instances where FEMA was able to do good work. What we wanted to focus on here are the places where this did not work for people, and in some cases in ways that had some really detrimental effect on individual flood survivors' lives. And so I think it's worth highlighting those stories as well.
Mm. Well, Pete, your reporting includes many, many more details and stories than we could touch on here today. You can find that story on vermontpublic.org. Pete Hirschfeld, thank you so much for your time today and for your great reporting.
Yeah, thank you, Michaela.